Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and our reverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 11, The Darkness and the Light, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Michael Vajar. Sorry to that man.
I always read it as Viger,
but
that's my Star Trek The Motion Picture fandom coming out.
The Darkness and the Light aired on January 6th, 1997. As soon as I saw that, I was like, ew, January 6th. Like,
that day what happened on that day
anymore? There was an attempted coup in our country, remember.
I do.
Jesus Christ. No, I knew you were being silly.
This week on Deep Space Nine, a hidden enemy systematically murders Kira's old resistance comrades. We'll start this episode the way we start every episode, or mostly every episode. I haven't gone back and listened to all of them to make sure that I start them all this way, but the vast majority I do. Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
So I thought I remembered this episode, but honestly, I think I just recall meeting that couple in Kira's resistance cell the last time they were on. So, like, yeah. I don't think I really remembered this episode. I certainly did.
Yeah, that was the one where Kira goes, we meet Shakar for the first time, and yeah.
I did actually read that Shakar was meant to be in last week's episode, Rapture, and this week's episode, but they cut his role for budgetary reasons. But I do think we're pretty lucky to get two Bajoran episodes in a row. Like, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, and it's like it's a Bajoran kind of politics episode. Like, it's... what am I trying to say? I think the strength...
Like, yeah. Last episode was obviously religious, and this one was political.
But this was, like, kind of small. But, like, it's another episode that dives into Kira's, like, past as a resistance fighter in the Bajoran resistance, and the idea of, like, oh, she was a, air quotes, terrorist. And it's, like, actually interested for, I think, more or less, like, one of the first times in the series about exploring what that means and, like, what that is and, like, the ramifications of that and, like, I don't want to be a hide in nuancing. It's complex. It's a complex. Let's, like, hide in the nuance to avoid accountability. But, yeah, it just is like, okay, Kira's like, yeah, I was a terrorist. What does that mean? Right? Like, so.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we'll get into it in the kind of in the finale of the episode, but I do think that they, you know, the person that's responsible for all of this puts her in a place where she kind of has to reconfirm her actions, which I find really interesting. I do want to say that while Ronald D. Moore is the person who wrote this teleplay, the story for this episode was from
Brian Fuller. I've heard that name before.
People may know Brian... Yeah, exactly. People may know him as the co-creator of Star Trek Discovery, but I first knew him as the creator of the Showtime show Dead Like Me with Mandy Patinkin. It ran for two seasons, and it was about death and the Grim Reaper, and, like, I found it really fun.
Yeah, Brian Fuller also was a writer a little bit later than on. Wrote for Voyager for... a little bit, like, at least he was on the staff for, like, one season. Also, folks might know him from Pushing Daisies, which he also created. And perhaps best known now as the creator and showrunner of Hannibal. A show that...
Yes, I knew you were going to go there, so I wasn't even going to mention it because I have not seen it.
It's worth seeing. I really like it. It's only like three seasons, but it's just wild to me, like, when you watch it, like,
yeah,
that is aired on network television. Like, you just watch it and send some of the macabre sort of imagery, because again, it's Hannibal, it's, you know, playing in the, you know, Red Dragon sort of universe, and then the last run of episodes in the final season, they just straight up adapt Red Dragon, which is
interesting. I have seen that.
Which again,
movie.
Michael Mann first adapted it in Manhunter. Yeah,
once I saw it in the movie.
Yeah, Michael
theater
Mann,
when it
one
came
of his
out.
Early movies, is an adaptation of that too, Manhunter.
It's
where is it going? Sulla the Macabre imagery. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. This would have aired on HBO. Like, I just saw someone get beheaded on House of the Dragon last week. But then you're
right,
like, it aired on NBC.
And
you're
like,
whoa.
Right. And Dead Like Me was on Showtime. So I do feel like it's interesting to have, like, a Brian Fuller property on, like,
yeah, and like,
I know
we're not a Hannibal podcast, but I think one of the things that, like, I like the most about it, and, like, it shows up and makes it interesting, is very much in that kind of, like, Manhunter, like, 80s sort of, like, vibe. Brian Fuller would always, like, tell new directors when they, like, came on to direct an episode of Hannibal that we're not shooting TV, we're shooting an 80s art house film. Right? So, yeah.
I love that. It's so your shit.
And it even has, like, a little bit of that... that network, like,
I'm
procedural
happy for
element
you that happened.
Too, which is like kind of like calming at times.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think I watched the first few episodes, but like I hadn't gotten
yeah,
to like
the really
juice,
gay shit.
The juicy bits. I do want to call out that like the original idea for this kind of came from Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, which is something I probably read when I was younger, but don't really remember that much. Agatha Christie is a writer that I would like to reread, because I love mysteries in general. But yeah, makes sense. I did think that this episode had a lot of thriller and horror elements, especially at the end. I love when Star Trek does genre fiction. It makes me very happy.
Yeah, and just even, like, that whole, like, the whole end and the last scenes and, like, the, like, evocative like light and darkness imagery and like monologuing, like I know Fuller didn't write the teleplay for it, but it just feels kind of Brian Fuller, like the horrorness of it all just feels very Brian Fuller to me, like baby
yeah,
Brian Fuller.
I thought so too, which is funny because I don't think he was like yeah but I also don't think he was like
no.
I don't think he was super no. involved at that point, so it is funny, like it is funny that they did use, like, vibe, you know, his kind of vibes. This is not related to this episode, but I have one thing that's been, like, frustrating for me is that, and this is not related to this episode in specific, but, like, for the last season or so, I'm finding that the episodes just, like, look really bad on my television. And, like, sometimes even on my iPad. And I don't mean the graphics. I just feel like it's very pixelated. And I've become, like, increasingly frustrated with it. I think what I'm going to do is, like, when I watch the next episode, I'm going to watch it on Paramount Plus to see if it looks any better than the iTunes version that I have. Which, like, I know, like, they never remastered this show except for the various scenes that were in the documentary. You've been watching it on DVD, right?
Like, I haven't noticed a, like, change in quality there, because again it is the physical disc, like, and of course it's not the same as if it was watching a Blu-ray or like whatever, right? Even though I think my PlayStation just upscale it a little bit, but before DS9 left Crave, which is one of our streaming services up here, sometimes I, because I'd be too lazy to get out the physical DVD, I would stream it, and
yeah,
I switched to the DVDs because it was like, and again, streaming inherently is going to be like, you know, quality dependent and like things like that in terms of like your resolution and stuff. But like the same thing, it got, it felt like it wasn't even the DVD quality anymore. It was, like lesser. So I don't know what their original like source codecs or things like that were. And I wonder if it's something to do like that with the iTunes. It would be interesting to know if Paramount was a better source, or if that's just what the streaming ones are now. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, to be, like, they do still sell the complete series on Amazon. for like under $60, but like having spent $30 on the streams, like I probably don't want to buy that.
No, that's totally fair.
I bought the series on iTunes in like a major sale. Like I literally bought TNG, TOS, and Deep Space Nine, and then a little bit later Enterprise because I was watching that. But like I spent only $30 on each one, and I felt like it was worth it. It's just I don't know if I'm. I mean, it could be I'm paying more attention. I have no idea, but it just feels like it's looking worse and worse. Maybe I've been watching too good of cinema lately. Do you want to get into it?
Let's do it.
So Kira is very, very, very pregnant in this episode, which is hysterical because Nana had already given birth. And I think it's the first time where it looks very fake pregnancy to me, like the way that they have her stomach showing. So that's very amusing. I mean, I'm not an expert. It just looks like it's just they put like a pillow in there or something.
Yeah, and this was, again, like, more, like, not... There have been a lot of episodes lately where Kira's been pregnant, but haven't really, like, referenced the pregnancy as much. And whereas this one, it was very much a...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're shown her, like...
Yeah, this one, it was very much a plot point in this one. And I really started having thoughts about beaming and, like, the transporter while pregnant when I was watching this episode. Because, like, for all intents and purposes, the transporter, like, it kills you and then recreates you. Like, right? So it's, like, you could have this, like, philosophical sort of discussion of, are you the same person? Or is it, like, a, you know, like, the prestige sort of thing, right? You could prestige it.
I was actually talking to my... I was talking to my boss about teleportation recently, and I do think that every time I talk about teleportation, I totally mean transporting in Star Trek and how it works. Because, you know, every, like, maybe, like, once a week or once every 2 weeks, I'm like, I wish teleportation actually existed. So, I was explaining to him the whole, like, Will Riker, Thomas Riker thing and how, like...
Yeah.
It fucks up sometimes. And I'm just like imagining in real life if we had that technology, just having like, what if there were two versions of me? Or what if
like we went somewhere together, like, you know, like when we were both went to Banff or something and we got Tuvixed?
Oh my God. That would be insane. And also, I think that that
the most annoying person in the world.
No offense to us, the most insufferable person that ever existed. Yeah. Like that sounds. I'm sorry for everyone who has to know, like, Malise. That's what I'm calling
it. That's like when I go to, when I go to, like...
Or Elat.
When I go Elat to, Thu. Like, the, like, open improv jams and, like, improv workshops and stuff like that. Like, it's fun. I fucking love it. But I look around, I'm like, oh, this is a collection of those most annoying people from, like, every friend group.
I love it.
But
I love
that back to the transporter, it made me wonder, it's like, so if you're dying and getting reborn or Tesla's prestige machine, it's like, what does that mean for the fetus? Right? And we're going to leave that thought there before we get into, like, really you know, any, when does life begin sort of rhetoric there, but... And for those listeners wondering, no, I wasn't high when I had this thought. It just literally popped in my head.
I have my Jewish thoughts on when life begins, and I'll let people just Google what the Jewish rules are for that, if they're interested. So, this is where it becomes like, and then there were none. One by one, members of Kira's resistance cell are being targeted and killed, and Kira gets a message each time. So, she gets, like, a pad that has the picture of the first dead cell member, Latha Mabrin. They have, like, the dumbest fucking
racist
names. I say that with love. And it's, yeah, I'm being very racist against the Bajoran naming tendencies. And there's a distorted voice saying, like, that's one. It's very clearly a threat. And it's interesting because... She also, like, wishes she could go to Bajor to help with the investigation, but because she's, like, towards the end of her pregnancy, she's, like, you know, probably not supposed to travel and, like, just staying near home and et cetera, et cetera.
Also, sorry, just to jump in.
So it feels
there.
Like...
I just want to call out the herbs to
yeah, of course.
Help with the nausea or whatever that may or may not react with sedatives that cure. It's not changing. The sneeze, yeah.
The sneezing. Yeah.
Chekhov's herbs. Remember those. They'll be important later.
I can't believe I just said herbs. Like, what am I? It's herbs. I don't mean it to, like, comment on how you're pronouncing it. I just am commenting that I said it incorrectly to myself. Like, I said it the way I would normally wouldn't
you're
say
right.
it.
It is herbs.
And that's because people pronounce things differently. No, but I also think, like, it depends on where you're from. People just pronounce things differently, and that's
every
fine.
Once in a while, I think of our progress versus progress, or it's a process or a process sort of conversation, and okay. then I, like... break my yes. brain and then have to wait for it to reset like for 10 minutes.
I mean, I also feel like I have a very New York way of pronouncing things.
Elise, when was the last time you lived in New York?
Just, you know. I'm just
there's that thing, right? Where people say they're from New York and they're actually from New Jersey.
Oh God! Yeah, no, I definitely meant that.
I know
in,
what
like,
you meant, Elise. I'm just
like,
being
New
a bitch.
Jersey and New York
I'm just
pronounce people things similar. I know what you know, but I'm saying this for our listeners, which are all people who probably know me anyway.
Or have come to know you.
No, the last time I lived in New York was... Yes, that's fair. I don't want to alienate anyone. I really hope there are people listening that don't know us specifically. That makes me really happy. I have not lived in New York since I was like 2.5.
That's when you were learning to speak, so...
which is why I don't claim to be from there. Yeah, exactly. At this point, my parents have lived in New Jersey longer than they lived in New York, so that says something. Because when I was 2.5, they were like in their early 30s, and like they're in their early 70s now. So, so after Lathamabrin dies, Kira gets a call from a former ally named Trenton Falla, who is very scared, and she's worried post Latha's death. You know, Kira invites her to Deep Space Nine for safety. And it's interesting because Falla is not part of the cell, but like worked in a communication role and passed information from the like that she saw from the Cardassians to them, which is an extremely risky thing to do. So it's kind of like she's like an honorary
source,
member
right?
of the cell
yeah.
because she an helped asset. Them out so much. Exactly. I do think that because of this, my brain tends to like overdrive with like what's going on. And I did for a moment wonder if someone inside the resistance cell was doing all of this, but I felt like that was more like me having read too many mystery novels involving military or like other sort of things. Like I'm thinking like Jack Ryan or like Lee Child's you know, Reacher series. Like, it just feels very like, ooh, is there someone from inside doing all of this? I don't know that that would have been interesting, but that's where my brain went.
Hall's coming from inside the house.
So, Dax? Exactly. although that isn't... Yeah, yeah. Or do we have a Scream situation? Spoilers for the movie
the
Scream.
The almost 30-year-old movie Scream. 28-year-old movie Scream.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So Dax and Worf are going to go pick her up, but there's like a surge in the pattern buffer at the same time, and like she dies, Falla dies, and there was like something every person that dies in this, there was like some little thing like placed on them to like cause this. It just feels very like every single person was very targeted. And so now that two of her friends are dead, Kira's like, okay, they're clearly targeting the entire cell. Like, one person could have been, like, a coincidence. You know, two people is like, okay, this is a thing now.
Hell yeah, it's a thing.
I do think it's interesting that they have the pads that are, like, now there's a second pad with, like, Falla's face, and it says that's two. That's, like, found at Quark's, and it came on some, like, brandy shipment. And it feels very much like... someone who made like a magazine cut out like threat to people. We do find out a little bit later that it is kind of like that because they, you know, of the voice they used for that.
Yeah.
message. There's then a third pad. Like, there's all sorts of pads here. There's a third pad with another person's face, but they haven't heard of that person having died yet. So Odo calls over to be like, hey, maybe look for that guy. He might be dead.
Yeah.
But he and that person, the third person, died as well. They give Kira extra security now. So, like, there's someone in her quarters, which is really the O'Brien quarters. And when she returns home, she hears a thud in their quarters and, like, has her phaser out. But we find out it's her old buddies, Lupaza and Pharrell, who we've met before, and they had knocked out her security, who is fine. They didn't kill him or anything.
He's just so funny. The guard is like, yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm sorry. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to be outside. He handles it quite well.
Right. Yeah, I thought so, too. She, of course, invites him to stay because Keiko and Molly are on Earth. I do think it's very interesting, the conversation that Kira has with Lupaza and Pharrell, because she's like, just let the authorities handle it. And I'm like, I bet those two are like, when did we ever start trusting the authorities? Like, this kind of... Yeah, exactly. And it feels really weird because, like, it's A, like, Kira's pregnant and probably very tired and doesn't, like, have the energy, but also it shows like how Kira has changed over the last like 5 years, which we saw last week too when she was like, yeah, we should join the Federation, etc., etc. So it is interesting to see Kira compared to her Resistance cell friends. Like, there's always a clash because she's become a little bit more involved in the system rather than fighting against the system. So there's always,
that's
like,
one
a
of
difference
my favorite
of opinion
parts
there.
Of, like, a Cure episode, because, like, I mean, I can think of, like, a handful of ones where, like, she has that kind of, like, moral, like, dilemma, right? Like, there's the one, I think it's in season one, where there's, like, the really stubborn old guy who doesn't want to leave the moon because they're building the new dam or whatever.
Yes! Yeah. And she, like, yep. I remember that for sure. I actually didn't love Kira in that episode. So Odo has been, like, doing this investigation. He thinks that the murders were done professionally, but the anonymous messages don't really track with that. So he's come to the conclusion that the person doing this is clearly someone that has a vendetta against the Resistance cell, which I think helps him because then he could, like, come up with a list of suspects and everything. I do love the idea that they get Nog involved with trying to decode the messages. His lobes are very helpful. And this whole thing makes me kind of wish I was a Ferengi when I did Star Trek.
Oh, when you did the tabletop? Yeah.
Like, role-playing game? Yeah, because I just think it'd be really fun to have, like, that as an extra skill, you know? Like, in your skill tree or something. They do find out that the voices of, like, that's one, that's two, that's three, Kira's own voice being pulled from different speeches or things that she said. As we can expect, you know, there's an explosion in the O'Brien's quarter. So that sexy couple that we've now met a second time is unfortunately... dead, and the station's been put on full alert, and there's, like, a whole breach in the O'Brien's quarters, and it's just, like, it's fucking shitty. Like, this fucking sucks. Because of that, we get an amazing scene of a pregnant Kira kicking ass and, like, fighting her way through security to try to get towards the O'Brien's quarters. I do think that this scene is a little bit bananas, but also... watching a pregnant Kira beat the shit out of people kind of rules. Like, I really enjoyed myself. And obviously it sucks because she, like, collapses. But the baby's fine, so. The scene was very, like, dramatic. And I was a little bit laughing, but, like, not at it. Just, like, this is very silly to have her, like, pregnant and, like, just beat the shit out of
didn't,
people.
It,
to, like, get yeah, through. It didn't like, she's really, so angry. Like,
Yeah, it kind of stretched believability. Here's believability in Star Trek. It like stretched. Yeah, it stretched believability.
That's kind of what I'm
saying.
Then it's like it was just like.
And again, in classic Star Trek fashion, there are like zero consequences for like beating up your coworkers and stealing a runabout. Like,
Like, yeah, there's a lot of things that Kira does in this episode that would like probably get her in trouble, which I want to get to very shortly. But I do want to say that I enjoyed learning something new about Kira that we hadn't known before. We learn that her earring is made from the ship that they ambushed in her first mission, like during, like when joining that resistance cell. I said that really ass backwards. But basically, her earring was made by one of her cellmates, resistance cellmates, because I feel like saying cellmates implies a prison. I just thought that was very cool. Mm-hmm. It's the earring she still wears. So I just liked learning something new about her that was, like, important to who she is.
It's a cool character detail, and especially, like you say, in that internal struggle between, like, this, like, liberal institutionalist, like, structuralist, like, future that she's involved with and helping building with that, you know, armed revolutionary, like, resistance fighter, like, fuck the system, but like outside of that, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, she carries that reminder, like not just the traumas, but like a physical, like, you know what I mean? It's, yeah, it's interesting. I like that bit.
Yeah. Very cool. So Odo has a list of suspects who have the motive and skills to pull this off, but he won't show it to Kira, assuming she'll run off and try to handle things herself, which A is funny because like that's so different from what she told her friends earlier that she wanted to do. But now that like five of her friends are dead, she's just like, Odo's correct. Like, she is going to try to figure this out herself. Like, she literally beams herself into his office, copies the list, deletes the list so that, like, he can't follow her, and, like, runs off and, like, hides her emissions trail so they can't follow the runabout either. So they don't know where she's going because they don't have this, the list of suspects. Although, I feel like Odo could probably just create that again based on the information he had. But that will still set them back, you know? Apparently, the first three people on the list could not have done this. I don't really know what they... Like, they are... Like, I got the impression maybe they were, like, old and frail or something. They don't really say. But the fourth name, Solaren Prin, he just sounds like someone that would be doing this, honestly. He lives near the DMZ, and as soon as she gets to, like, his location, he stuns her. So it's pretty clear that Prin is the mastermind behind this. And this is where the episode gets really horror/scary for me. And I say that complimentary because I really, really enjoyed it. Kira wakes up and she's tied up. And Prin is just like ranting at her. And it's just escalated because like, yeah, you're worried about Kira, but you're also really worried about the O'Brien baby that's inside of her. We learn that from his rantings that Prin was disfigured by a bomb used to assassinate Gol Parak, and Gol Parak's crime was that he had killed 15 Bajoran farmers who refused to display a Cardassian flag. So, like, this is, like, peak fascism. Like, you won't, like, show that your allegiance to Cardassia, so we're going to kill you. Like, it's very fucked up. And Prin, I think, was a servant in Parak's home. I don't really remember what he said, but basically all of Parak's family was killed and about 23 servants were injured. Because of how he was injured, he makes it a real mission in his murders to only kill the person that he feels is responsible. He's like, I could have just, like, exploded everybody, but I didn't want to kill any innocents. And it's really interesting that he thinks that that makes him better than Kira. Because he's, like, continuing to rant about the darkness and the light and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the idea of, guilt versus innocence and, you know, violence being justified against some but not others. It's like...
This is such an interesting episode when you get to kind of like the final act. And I don't think it's as strong of an episode as Duet, which again is, I think, one of my top five episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Right. But it,
but like it does the have idea similar vibes. Of, you know, the Harris Yulin's character, I can't remember his name, making himself physically look like the Butcher of Galatep, of like the camp commander, and not being
right
directly guilty of his crimes, much because and just being a file clerk, much like Prin was, you know, a servant or a waiter or like whatever, right? But feeling the guilt of having been there and being what's the word I'm looking for, complicit in the war crimes of the labor camp, to the point that like he needed to be punished, whereas Prin thinks the perpetrators of the resistance cell need to be punished because he views himself as like innocent and not, you know, and again, yeah, he's not part of the
I looked it up. Thank the you, guy's Amon name Maritza. Was Mar- thank you, Maritza thank you, thank
you. The file clerk.
And
yeah, he wasn't a part of the military structure in the same way, but yeah, it's just, this is where like we said, this episode really digs into like, you have a character in your main cast who was a resistance like fighter. What does this actually mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the, right? Like, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. And it means that she, you know, blows people up when she needs to, because they did something evil. And there are cases where you can't account for, like, it was obviously more important for their cell that this person die and not... No, I mean, we don't see their side of it, but like, we don't know if they tried to limit the explosion or anything like that. But like, in their minds, all of the people that, even the servants, are still guilty because they work for these people. And I think it's really interesting that Prin kind of like wants Kira to regret her actions. And I think that she's put in a place where she has to be like, no, that I did the right thing, because you as a culture should not, like, as a race or, you know, people that are coming here to occupy us, like, should not have been here at all. And so there, I mean, she's taking the stance of, we were being oppressed, and so there is no, like, we were trying to get out of being oppressed, and there's, you know, we have to do what we have to do to get out of this situation. And we can't think about every little innocent person that may not be involved mm-hmm. with this, the Cardassian regime, you know, because otherwise we'll never get out of this situation. That was a lot of word salad, but I was just trying, or it was like a lot of me coming up with it on the spot. But I do think she's saying like, no, you should not have been here. So what we did was the right thing, mm-hmm. regardless of how many people died. Mm-hmm. And she needs to believe mm-hmm. that. And I don't blame her for that, actually.
I mean, it's just like, not to be overly simplistic about it or whatever, but like, violence begets violence, right? Like, that's the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, this is very silly, but like, it made me think of this one scene in Kill Bill where you've seen that movie, right? So it's my favorite Tarantino, so I've seen it a number of times. But like, so she goes, you know, she's taking revenge on the people that tried to kill her, and she thinks that they killed her baby, or her unborn baby. And so she goes and takes care of all of them. And like, there's a scene where she kills, was it Vivica E. Fox's character? What was her character? I don't know, whoever her character was. And her daughter oversees the whole thing. Like, she sees the end of the fight, and she says to her, like, she's like, your mom had it coming, but if you feel sore about it when you're older, like, I'll be ready for you to come fight me. And like, it's very much like, it kind of made me think of this in the like, when does it end? Like, you know, you did this to me, so someone else is gonna do it. It just continues forever.
I don't remember what her like code name is, but
thank you. Wasn't it She was, I do remember her being upset she wasn't Black Mamba.
Yeah.
But I can't remember. Copperhead. I almost said that. Damn it. Kill Bill. Great. But yeah, Vernita Green. She was going by a different name as this person's mom. Something Bell was her, was Bell, I think, was her married name.
This whole episode, like, I know it's based on the Agatha Christie the creepiest... novel, but it just kind of killed Billy when you think about it.
Yes. It totally is Kill Bill. Prin is going to, like, cut the baby out. And he... This part I found hysterical. Not the baby cutting out part. But, like, the fact that he tries to sedate her, but check the off herbs she's been taking to stop her sneezing during the pregnancy can't counteract the sedative. That is the most bananas thing that I've ever heard. Good thing always she was pregnant and taking these herbs.
At the pharmacology of your drug interactions.
Which is so funny because I have, like, you know, an iPhone, and now I, like, I log all my medicines so that I can have reminders of when to take them. And whenever I add a new medicine, I always look at what the interactions are. But he didn't know that she was taking that herb, so as soon as he comes close to her, she kills him, because he had, like, deactivated the security around her, thinking that she was, sedated.
24 hours ago, I want to be sedated.
But the cutting out the baby was part of
yeah,
really
and even
creepy.
The fact originally he wasn't going to do, like, use the sedatives, and then she's like, please, please, just use the sedatives. He's like, yes, I will give you, and then he tries to, because it's like, then he feels he even has a higher moral high ground, right? Like, I will show mercy where you didn't. I'm a better human, air quotes, than you are. Better sentient
yes.
being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those fucking herbs. And then, yeah, Kira escapes. She kills Prin.
The way you said herbs just now, just, like, red, or, like you were calling people that are shitty, like, oh, those fucking herbs. Like,
I mean, that's, like the short form of Herbert, right? Like, from
about
Which
a person
Way to Eat
or something.
The Space Hippies. Don't be a Herbert.
I don't
from TOS.
Know. I don't know that.
The Space Hippie episode? Yeah.
Mm. I'm just bad at remembering shit.
Yeah. I also like how randomly the Defiant's just there at the end. Well, not randomly, because they go to find her, but it's like, okay, the episode's over, Defiant's here, let's beam up.
Yeah.
That's Star Trek for you. Elise, was there kind of any kind of closing thoughts you had on the episode proper?
No, I just really enjoyed it. It was heavy and scary in a fun way, but I had a really good time with it. I actually didn't end up rewatching it a second time, which was kind of weird for me, but I didn't think that I needed to because I was, like, so engaged the first time. Like, sometimes I watched the first round just to, like, get the plot points, but I was, like, really into it.
Yeah, my only kind of thought on the episode proper, I guess it kind of circles back to the cold open, is during the first assassination when it's, like, you know, the monks in the temple, just some of the way that V'ger... Mike Vahar, however you say his last name, shot it. And, like, there's that one shot through the pyre where it's kind of framing his face, and it kind of looks like you could interpret it like he's in a crosshair a little bit. I thought it was good. I always like when Star Trek, like, television directors add kind of a little bit more, like, flourishes you don't normally see in syndicated television. So
for sure.
Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek 3. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 in the MGM film Forbidden Planet, also known as The Tempest in Space. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
Before I answer that, the way you said now it's time, I was like, now it's time to say goodbye to all our family. MICKEY MOUSE. Anyway.
Disney, don't come for us.
I think my rendition was so poor that they could not even recognize it as being similar. So hopefully that's the case. Well, a couple things. Like, Kira's friends that break into the O'Brien's quarters are just, like, a hot couple.
They totally, like, have a FetLife profile and what the Bajoran equivalent is. And, like, they're always looking for, like, a third or, like, group stuff or whatever. They just, like, yeah. They're into kink. They have some kinks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you that you may or might not want to answer. Did you read it that way because you would like to join them, or did you just like?
Well, it's all a moot. It's all a moot point,
or both,
because they were murdered. Rest in peace.
Yes, that's true. Oh, that's sad. The other thing that I thought was kind of hot was this conversation between Worf and Jadzia when they were like trying to rescue. Fala, they're like having this whole conversation about this like gambling debt that Dax now has, and Worf is like, Quark may lend you the money because she like owes some latinum, but remember rule of acquisition 111, treat people in your debt like family, exploit them. And then Dax is like, you know the rules of acquisition? And Worf just is like, I'm a graduate of Starfleet Academy, I know many things. I think that Dax was really turned on by Worf knowing that, because she loves the Ferengi. So that was just really hot for me and for Jadzia.
And Doran's delivery of like when Worf may or may not be funny and charm, like it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
They definitely went for that a lot in Picard season 3, and like I don't think it worked for me as much, but anyways, I think they did it too much, but...
Oh my god, no. Everything about Worf in season 3 of Picard is, like, I just would watch... like, it's like a porno for me. Like, it's just so hot. I'm obsessed with everything about Worf in that series. At some point. The gray hair.
All right. Now it's time for the most Star Trek thing, in which... I think I actually have two candidates for that, if you'll indulge me.
Oh, please. Yes, I will, because I don't have one.
So my initial thing is my conflict, my conflicted feelings about Odo. It's like, I like him in this episode. He's good. He's a caring friend. But then I'm also like, but you have really bad politics sometimes. And then my other most Star Trek thing, which is probably a most like another most DS9 thing specifically, where's Molly? Where's Keiko? The plot doesn't need them to be here, so they're not. Why?
They're on Earth visiting Keiko's.
But like,
parents.
Why would Keiko be that far away from the station when like Kira's gonna pop any day?
Yeah, that makes no sense. I agree. It's like she's like a few weeks out. Like that. I guess it's Keiko's last trip before the baby. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyways, that bugged me.
It is kind of also weird that she went without, like, Miles, because I feel like they'd want to see their families, but I also feel like their families should, maybe their families are going to come out after the baby's born.
Well, I'm
just making shit up.
Your headcanon is as valid as anyone else's.
Yeah.
All right. Elise, this has been great.
It has been.
And until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Blue Sky Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi, that's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod, that's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Awesome, you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at Podrace. And you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.